If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps is for you. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for.
This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on...
on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space. And I'm about to die.
We need an opening.
Found one.
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace.
Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome back to Rebels Reactions here. This is Aaron Harris, your host, and man, just when you thought Rebels couldn't get any better, they hit us with this. We are only two episodes into the second season, and boy, they are changing things left and right on us. This is a game-changing episode. And joining me tonight to discuss this episode, we are joined by two awesome people. We're not a stranger to the show. We're joining us again is Miss Becca Benjamin. How are you, Becca?
I'm good. I'm excited. I'm just ready to dive in here.
Oh, same here. Same here. A lot of great stuff in this episode. And joining me also tonight is the one, the only, Tommy Mack. How are you doing, Tommy?
Hey there. Hi there. Ho there. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, no, thank you for joining us. This is a great episode, and definitely, like I said, when I saw this episode, and I was thinking of seeing all the Maul we were going to have in it, knowing how big of a Maul fan you were, this was just, you know, a natural fit. So definitely glad you could join us today, and man, this was quite the episode, I tell you. I mean, this is the second episode of the season, and this is definitely one of probably even more popular from what I've been talking to people, more popular than the premiere, honestly, with everything that's happened. So briefly what's going on here, of course, we had the episode start off. Of course, Darth Maul returns again, except for this time he has launched his ultimate plan. He has captured the Ghost crew and is bartering them for freedom from Kanan and Ezra in exchange for the Sith holocron, as well as the Jedi holocron that Kanan has, an ultimate goal to learn ultimate knowledge, ultimately, and find out the future, and find out the answers to their questions. So this sends Kanan and Ezra, of course, on a journey path back to Bendu to get the holocron, and of course, helps journey down their relationship and push them down a path even further there, ultimately leading to the ultimate showdown with Maul at the end, with what became a surprising twist in the show with this holocron vision. Let's get into this. Let's start right off the bat. Of course, we're going to start off with Kanan and Ezra there. We definitely have seen a lot of tension in their relationship from the premiere, and of course, even through the beginning of this episode, there's still that tension between the two. You know, you see a lot of almost guilt that Ezra is still harboring for what happened at the end of season two.
Yeah, I noticed that. And am I the first person, or probably not, to think of the relationship between Anakin and Obi-Wan around episode three, very, very much paralleling what's going on with Ezra and Kanan right now?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Oh, absolutely. No, you're not the first person I think you're the first person to mention it on the air with us, but I have had a similar discussion with somebody. Yeah, it's definitely very reminiscent, or very, that's not the right word.
Reminiscent works.
Reminiscent.
It's very similar. Let's just go that
similar.
Way.
Yep.
Similar. Similar is going to work for me because that wasn't the word. Reminiscent wasn't the word I was wanting. But it's very similar in context to their relationship. And I've seen a lot of that lately with Ezra from my point of view, watching him through the seasons. He's running, in my opinion, a very similar path to that of Anakin right now. With the focus on attachment to his family, the which is of course our ghost crew, and of course all the loss he's dealing, and the fact that he's not wanting to lose any more people, he wants to make sure everybody's protected. What are your thoughts, Becca?
I agree on a lot of those aspects. Ezra, though, the difference between him and Anakin is the fact that, you know, his focus is a little different. It's not about, I mean, he does want the power to be able to save his friends and to defeat the Sith, but I think his intentions at heart are really good. And so are Anakin's, but the difference is his control is there more than Anakin's was. Anakin's was a lot more reckless. Ezra, in a sense, does tend to think more, and I think that's a push from Kanan. He definitely wants him to more problem solve. We didn't hear that a lot out of Obi-Wan to Anakin. It's a different time, a different era, so a lot of that comes to play. There's a difference, too, where Anakin didn't have a good support system. I actually just wrote about this. And it's funny because Dave Filoni unknowingly basically affirmed it for me with Rebels Recon. And I was like, yes, I said all that. He had such a weak link, Anakin. There was no support. He almost was stunted emotionally the moment he left Shmi. He didn't have anyone to help develop or basically instill those skills for coping with, you know, life's trials and tribulations, where Ezra has a strong family support. They encourage, they mentor, they nurture him. You know, Anakin didn't get that. Where it surprises me then, again, that Ezra leans towards the dark because he has that support. He has that encouragement from all of them, you know, especially at this point. But the interesting thing is, not to jump ahead, is Bendu kind of nails it with sometimes you start off with the good intentions. You know, you mean to do well, but you kind of lose that direction, which I think is more of what they're hinting at when it comes to Ezra. I think he does mean well. He has no, in the back of his mind and in his heart, he has no thoughts of turning bad or going dark. He just wants to basically use the knowledge if he can, but in his way. That's what I'm seeing. But definitely the parallel between teaching is there. The difference is Kanan's willing to listen. Obi-Wan really didn't. So there's that difference going on. And my God, can I just say that I wish these episodes were longer than 22 minutes? Ugh.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to shut up and let someone else take the helm here.
No,
go for it.
You're exactly right. Definitely the big difference between the Anakin and Ezra is the support structure. Ezra has the support of the Ghost crew. It's a family. There actually is some caring for his well-being and what he's going through and how he's feeling. And with Kanan as his teacher, Kanan is really focusing in on keeping him from going the route that he has seen happen in the past. And definitely is strong for him. But Bendu, too, you brought up Bendu. Bendu had a big role in this episode too, because of course at the end of the premiere, of course we know that Kanan left the Sith holocron with Bendu, so now he has to go back and get it in order to save Hera, Sabine, Chopper, and Zeb, as well as rescue the Ghost, because you know they don't need to lose another ship out of this already. Just two episodes in, this isn't Star Trek, you know. So he has to go, of course, confront Bendu and try to get that holocron back. And we see this Bendu now using this to try to essentially bring them together. He senses the turmoil between them, and how much turmoil is between Kanan and Ezra because of this holocron and the Sith holocron. And definitely it's something he wants to see balance brought to. And I tell you that one line right before they go, when Kanan runs into the cave and leaves Bendu out there by himself, he goes in to rescue Ezra, where maybe he looks at the little slug creature climbing around and goes, maybe this will bring restore their balance, or maybe they'll be eaten. Such is the way of things.
Priceless. Yes.
Perfect.
Priceless. Tom Baker delivered that perfectly.
Yeah, what a great casting there. That was just very awesome, impressive.
Oh, very much, very much. But with Bendu, definitely is almost. I know there was some discussions I've had off the air where with some other people where they're nervous about where the Bendu's going, what kind of character this is going to be. So some people have worried where he's maybe going to wind up leading them astray or wind up being a point of contention again for Kanan and for Ezra. But definitely we see a lot of hope for him in this episode because he's actually trying to restore the balance. Overall, where do you see Bendu taking Kanan and Ezra on this journey, Tommy?
It's interesting because I'm trying to relate him to a Lord of the Rings character that was never used in the film, Tom Bombadil, where he was kind of like, he was a good character, but he didn't choose any sides. He wasn't for the good guys. He wasn't for the bad guys. He was kind of this in-between character that happened to guide our heroes along the journey. And that's kind of where I see Bendu is. He doesn't have a side. He's not dark side, but he's not Jedi either. He's not light side. He's just a force user. And he's not the first character. Correct me if I'm wrong. He's not the first character they've had in the animated series that's hinted at that kind of meeting in the middle ground of characters who are force users, but neither light side, fully light or fully dark. I'm trying to think if there's been other characters that I can't think of, obviously.
Yes, but in the Clone Wars, you're thinking of the Mortisark with the father, the son, and the daughter.
Right.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's where Bendu strikes me as one of these in-betweens where it's not about the dark side of the Force and it's not about the light side of the Force, but it's about this balance that we always keep hearing about, balance in the Force. Well, what exactly is that?
And that's a question that we're still searching for answers to.
Exactly. Exactly. They're not going to answer that, you know, anytime soon. There is probably no real answer to it. I mean, but it seems to hint at the fact that balance in the Force doesn't necessarily mean that just the Jedi rule the universe and take down the dark side. That's not balance either. So where is that balance?
Well, exactly. And this is a debate that's been raging since the original trilogy. I mean, and the new, or since the prequels, what is restoring balance to the Force? I mean, that was the whole thing with Anakin being the chosen one. He was there to provide balance, but what was the balance? It can't be, I mean, to have balance, you have an equal portion of everything. You can't you can't have the majority one, but not the other. It's almost a yin yang type thing.
And I find it interesting the introduction of this Bendu character at the same time that we have a dark side character in the return of Darth Maul and conflict once again with the light side characters of, you know, Kanan and Ezra, who's kind of falling in between at this point. But so again, we have this conflict between dark side and light side. And yet here's this Bendu character who's kind of in between.
Exactly. And of course, this is something that I've wanted to get your opinion on too, Becca. Bendu, what do you see him? What do you see happening with Bendu here, with him teaching and essentially becoming a teacher for Kanan at this point?
I like it because I see him more as a guide, and not to go either way, but just a guide in the Force itself. First of all, I love Tommy's analogy. That was perfect. And the question about what is balance, it's an ambiguous thing. And I think it will always be that way. I think to give it a straight answer, you kind of take away or discredit
the lure into it, not the lure, but the lure and what draws you in, you know? And I love the fact, yeah, it's awesome. And I love the way Bendu used the word or the term unbalanced in between master and apprentice, not as galaxy wide, you know, or like on a galactic scale, just very personal, which also makes me believe that maybe again, we have looked at this in a completely wrong way. Not that there should be a wrong or a right, but again, it leads me back to the whole Yoda statement with maybe the prophecy was misread. It goes even with the Force, because maybe we need to unlearn everything we have learned thus far and really take, you know, take an ear and listen to this Bendu person or Bendu character, because again, he is neither the light or the dark. And in a sense, I think this character is almost replacing that of Ahsoka, because Ahsoka wasn't a Jedi. She's made that clear. And even when she would bring forth just knowledge-based lessons, not so much Jedi lesson, but knowledge based on Force to Ezra, even to Kanan, she spoke in a way where it was more spiritual sensed. And that's how I look at the Bendu. You know, he's not telling you really to choose right or wrong. It's to, even just the way he says to Kanan, listen and you'll hear it. Very similar to Qui-Gon. I always goes back to Qui-Gon, another character that I think died way too soon. And just that whole line there, I think a lot of people miss that. But he says, listen and you will hear it. I mean, it was said to Anakin. Again, it's based on what Anakin was always told no and not to do. It's based on listening to your own emotion. What does your heart tell you? What, you know, what do you feel at this moment is really the right thing to do? Because the right thing to do is typically the hardest thing to do. So that's just it. I think I think it's going to be a big laugh in the end. I think we've looked too hard into this, and it's going to be something like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? But I think, I know, right? But I look at Bendu almost like, this is going to sound weird, but almost like the Yellow Brick Road. It's the guide. He's setting them up.
No, exactly.
You know, he's setting them on a path, and he's hoping that they choose the right path. I don't think Bendu can really tell them which way to go. He warns them, you know, through his whole conversation with both master and apprentice, he warns them, you know, basically in a sense, he's telling them with great power or great knowledge comes responsibility. And that's so true with everything, even in our real world, you know, politics and everything going forward. When you have such a knowledge or a big power, you know, rested or put on your shoulders, it comes with a big responsibility, because what you decide at that moment is going to affect everybody that's basically in the same motion that you're going. So I think more or less Bendu is going to be that, you know, how you've got the angel and the devil sitting on either shoulder. I think, I don't want to use the word angel, but in a spiritual sense, that's how I'm seeing it. He's that little whisper like, hey, maybe you better think a little harder on that.
He's Jiminy Cricket.
Took it right out of my mouth, my man.
Beautiful. Thank you. That's the word.
He's a really big Jiminy Cricket.
Yes.
Right, because size matters not.
Exactly.
You know, but that's how I see him. And I think they did an excellent job with the way they portrayed him and the voice, everything. Like, I could listen to him tell me things all day long. Seriously, it's just amazing the way they do it. And I just really hope Kanan and Ezra, I want to say especially Ezra. I know Kanan trusts who Bendu is, but I think Ezra needs to take those lessons that he's hearing from both Kanan and from Bendu a little more seriously. He's 17, so he's still not quite mature enough yet to take it all in. You know, he's not fully grasping everything. He may understand what the words mean, but what does it really mean, you know, when it comes to the whole knowledge aspect of it? So we got to see where this goes, but I hope we do see more.
Oh, definitely. And I'm sure we're going to see more. Definitely. It's one of those things that I don't think we'll stop seeing until the show ends at that point. We got a lot of growth for these characters to go, but you bring up Ezra, and let's talk about Ezra. Cause Ezra definitely has had quite the roller coaster through the premiere and even through this episode. We saw him with the Sith holocron, and come to find out he's been learning and gaining knowledge and power from the holocron. Then it was taken away from him, and now he's having to get it. He's got the opportunity to get it back. And we see that holocron, of course, has been that point of contention between him and Kanan. How much do you really think that holocron has influenced Ezra?
Becca, well, I think pretty obvious so far. He's always been impetuous. But he's now impetuous, but more ruthless. We've seen him push, he pushed the stormtroopers off the edge of the dock there, and then had the walker step over the cliff. He didn't have to do that. It's a little ruthless for Ezra. And that's the sign of, he's leaning those dark side leanings take over. And you could say, yes, it's war. And I'm always kind of surprised for a cartoon with a kid show where they go with it sometimes, because I do have to remember it's supposed to be for kids. But they're still, they do take certain things to an edge that I'm impressed with sometimes. He's getting a little dark with it. Now, does anyone know, because I was curious, I only caught up on the two episodes myself last night. Has there been any explanation of how much time has gone by since the end of last season and this season? Obviously, Ezra's a little taller. He's grown a little older. There's been some passage of time.
6 months.
Six months. Yeah. Okay.
He's been playing
with that thing for 6 months. So you can't say it didn't influence him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said. Becca, thoughts?
Yeah, I got a lot of them.
I know you do.
Ezra scares me more than Anakin did, and I think because he's younger. And definitely younger. Anakin really didn't start this type of ruthlessness and teetering until he was in episode 3, and he was about 23 at the time.
Bunch of Tusken Raiders in 2.
But you got to remember, though, his mother was brutally murdered. There's a lot there. I don't want to bring that up.
Go ahead. I didn't want to cut off your train of thought.
Yeah, there's a lot there. And to me, that's a different scenario altogether. But he's definitely very influenced by the voice, the person or persona or whoever it is inside that holocron speaking to him. I think it's very similar to, if you read the novelization of Revenge of the Sith, there's a voice inside Anakin, and he refers to it as the dragon. And it lures him, and it's seductive. And I think that's almost what I think they're trying to go with here, with what the person who's speaking to Ezra, very sneaky, you know, Adam and Eve, and don't, you know, when you're in the garden, don't eat the apple. Yeah, very... You know, because I think her voice is not only siren-y, like luring that way, because it's the same actress that played Ventress. It's not Ventress, but it's the same actress that voiced her.
Correct.
It has that seductive tone to it, and you can't help but listen to it. And what she basically gears Ezra to is an achievement. There's a goal behind what she's telling him. You know, you're going to save your friends. You're going to become victorious. So, yeah, at 17, that's cool. That's like, all right, I'm going to save my friends and we're going to win this thing and no more empire. But the problem is he's turning into the very thing he's trying to defeat. He's going back to that premiere with what he does to the troopers. Tommy said it was unnecessary. He didn't have to do that. Absolutely not. What he did was he instilled fear, not just in those troopers, but in his own party of friends and who he was fighting alongside with. Did you not catch the glimpse that Sabine gave him? She was like, what the heck did you just do?
Yeah.
You know, she was questioning now, maybe I better not tick him off because, hello, I might just be walking off a cliff. That instills fear in his friends because now they're wondering, okay, he didn't learn this from Kanan, so where is this coming from? He's walking a fine line, and where he's at now, and I'm going to, not meaning to, but I cannot wait to get to this character. I'm going to segue to Maul. Oh, I'm sorry, but Sam Witwer.
Well, he's the key. He is kind of the key in there, too.
Yes, this is where I'm going with this is, have you not noticed that even right now, and no one corrects him, Maul still refers to Ezra as my apprentice.
Exactly.
And it keeps reminding me of, interestingly enough, Anakin was Palpatine's apprentice the moment he took Dooku out. Well, perhaps everything that went down at Malachor, unknowingly, Ezra really is his apprentice. It's a possibility, and I'm leaning that way. Again, I keep saying this, you know, you may have good intentions. Anakin certainly did. Ezra certainly does. You know,
well, what's that old saying of, repeat a lie often enough and it becomes the truth? You know,
exactly.
Maul insisting that he's his apprentice, whether Ezra agrees with it or not, is kind of irrelevant.
He's not arguing with it either. He's not arguing it. Every time he hears it, he goes along with it. Kanan doesn't argue with it.
Right. Nobody actually objected. That's an interesting point.
Exactly. So that's my point. I mean, as a storyteller, as someone writing these stories, you don't just keep throwing something in there without reason. So I'm going that route. And I think that's another part with why he is where he is, because let's be honest, again, he's 17. You want to be able to help your friends. And if someone has an answer for you or the right reasoning to, you know, not maybe reasoning, but like I said, an answer or the help to do it, even though you may think it's wrong, but if it's going to fix the problem, you might just go with it. So I'm a little worried because Ezra is at that age where he really can go either way. I'm hoping with the support structure that he doesn't, but let's be honest, Maul at this point is not the Maul we saw in The Phantom Menace. He's not the Maul that we saw in The Clone Wars. He is a very tactful, very cunning, very brilliantly spoken, and he manipulates.
Well, he did learn. He did have a master that happened to be named Darth Sidious.
I know. So I'm kind of loving it. I mean, I'm like loving and hating him at the same time. But I really do, because I think what they brought to this character. Because at first, let me tell you, I wasn't happy when they first revived him. Mm-hmm. But okay, now now where he's at, I'm so thankful that they did. Because I have a feeling where they're going is going to be spectacular. But that's where I'm leaning with the whole character dynamic there.
Yeah, we're on the same page there, Becca. And when you're ready for mine, I'll cut loose on Maul. But when we get there.
Well, no, we were actually, since we brought him up, we were going to go ahead and jump right into Maul. Because definitely we have Maul as the linchpin of this entire episode. He started the episode with capturing the crew. He's manipulated the crew, and he's manipulated Ezra through the finale of last season, and of course through this episode as well. And we see Ezra, of course, with some wariness of Maul, but he's still, in part, I think there's a part of him that still has some trust in Maul. In some weird, dark sort of way, even though he knows that Maul's probably not the best end game for him at this point. But let's talk about Maul. Maul is probably one of the more popular Sith that have come out of the movies, revived during the Clone Wars, and we see him interacting with Ezra here. I mean, what do you feel is his ultimate end game with Ezra through all this?
That's a really good question. And I think they've left it vague up until this point of what his ultimate motive is, because they didn't even really give us what his ultimate motive was in the joining of the two holocrons. He drops this interesting line there where he says he's looking for hope. And I go, what exact kind of hope is he looking for? And he's still riding this ragged edge of how much do you trust him and how much don't you trust him. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see where they go with that.
To hear someone like Maul say he's looking for hope, it does leave you scratching your head. What is hope for Maul?
What exactly is hope for? What does it, right, exactly. because we know his original intentions, he laid some hints at the end of last season that he wanted to go after Sidious again or take on that again, and we all know that ultimately that would fail. So where his motives are leading him, like, what is his goal? What is his end game? We don't exactly know what that is at this point.
Exactly. So, Becca, with Maul now becoming such a big part of the story right now, with the influence he has over Ezra, with his unwilling to relent as calling him as his apprentice, and seeing the power that he really has and the influence he has, honestly, on this crew, whether they'll admit it or not. What do you see Maul going with this? What do you see him wanting to accomplish with this influence he has over this Ghost crew?
Oh, I'm going to try and do this in a way where I am not speculating too much, because I really am. And I've actually just mapped it out in my head of what I think is going on. And this is based on what we saw, mm-hmm. and based on what Rebels Recon gave us, with Pablo and Dave Filoni. And it's funny because, again, I'm going to go with the whole Star Wars thing, the whole phrases here. Hope is a point of view. I don't think Maul meant hope the way we would mean hope. His hope is a world where, or a galaxy where Sidious is gone, you know, Vader's bye-bye, and he gets what he wants. And to me, his ultimate prize has always been, which is funny, the same goal as Vader at this moment, and that's Kenobi. That's his goal. I know just as soon as he said what he said with he lives, I know that's what he meant. But well, so that whole hope line, I'm sorry, that's what dawned on me. That's the first thing.
I just find it funny, and I'm just, if you don't mind me jumping in, when you said that, because I kind of got this feeling that Kenobi was not initially his end game, and that all of a sudden this revelation, we're all assuming, obviously, that's what the revelation is.
Right.
It's almost, I mean, they almost beat you over the head with it without saying it, but
exactly.
I kind of almost get the feeling he got sidetracked from his game by discovering this fact.
Interesting. Yes.
Like he had a certain goal and he wanted to get these holocrons together to increase that, but he wasn't looking for Kenobi, and that's why it was a shock to find out.
Right. It was kind of like an added bonus.
He might be just shooting. Who knows what direction he's going now?
Right.
Exactly. Well, shooting off the cuff now, because it's something he didn't because I mean, we're talking about the scene, of course, at the end with the vision where they joined the two holocrons, and Ezra and Maul are seeing in the vision, and I'm just blanking on everything right now.
They put the holocrons together, and the idea is that they're supposed to be able to answer their questions, see their future, find their purpose, whatever it is that they're looking for by the joining of these two holocrons. And that's where I'm wondering if perhaps Maul's version of hope, when he says he's looking for hope, maybe he doesn't know exactly what he's looking for. He knows that if he puts these things together, maybe he can find his purpose, mm-hmm. or what his purpose now is, because his original purpose obviously has long since changed. He's no longer a Sith Lord. He's no longer the apprentice with the hope of becoming the master. Yep. So what is his goal? What is his purpose? Maybe that's what he's searching for in this whole joining of the holocrons, and then discovers what we all believe he's discovered, and now that's his tangent and that's where he's headed.
So hope for Maul is meaning.
Meaning, the meaning of his existence, of course, because he was set up with all this purpose, this grand design and purpose that he was led to believe by his master of being his apprentice and his goal of taking over the galaxy, and to just be cut down and destroyed and wiped away physically, mentally, everything, and then to rebuild himself over all these years, but not really have an ultimate purpose. So,
and literally rebuilding himself.
Yeah.
And going on with that, because you keep saying that you were saying that his original purpose kind of shifted. I think his, by listening to what they said right after with Pablo, I believe it was Pablo that said, Maul is going to start something new. And that hit home for me, because if you go back to the Malachor finale, he basically says, I am not a Sith. I want the Sith gone, which is where you're going with there. And he does. I fully believe that. And that's where I'm going is, if you jump forward into The Force Awakens, we know, obviously, one Jedi survives, and that is Luke. There are no more Sith. That is gone. There are different sects. There are different factorings when it comes to Force wielders. Hence the Bendu. You know, he's just someone right in the middle. There is this so-called Church of the Force, yada, yada. What else is there? We have what's called, and we only get a little bit into it, which is the Knights of Ren. Where did that start? My whole thing is, I feel Maul's goal, and I've been saying this since the finale, is to create something else, to start something else, because he does want that galaxy. He wants to take it from Sidious. How else is he going to do that? He needs to start anew. He did rebuild himself, after all. Why can't he rebuild a new faction?
Interesting.
So, very interesting.
That's where I've been going with this, and that's why I think he needs Ezra. He calls Ezra ambitious. Again, yes, he is. How ambitious is he, though? How far will he go? Very similar, again, as we've been saying, and actually, Tommy, you were the one saying it, how similar he is to Anakin. So, you know, again, you put the right carrot that's going to dangle. Right. How far will he go?
And, I mean, he's learned a lot. I've loved the absolute development of Maul's character, where he now parallels. He was, especially at the his introduction at the end of last season, this fine line between Yoda and Sidious.
Mm.
He had so much there. It bounced back and forth. The writers were brilliant because they borrowed from both characters and put them into Darth Maul, where he was this wise and caring, but at the same time twisting and manipulating. And it was really well done. And I'm loving what they've done with the character, because he's not the brute enforcer anymore. He's not just the muscle. He's very smart, very manipulative. He's learned from the best, and yeah, he's using all of it to his advantage.
Absolutely, and he definitely is. And this has definitely been a well-written character for him. And they've really changed his persona pretty much from what we saw at the end of the Clone Wars.
They gave him character in this show because he really didn't have much in his film debut. He had not a whole lot of character.
No, but even during the Clone Wars, the way they've grown him out of the Clone Wars from that season he was there, definitely we've seen a complete change in character. A more grown up, a more carefully planned out plan for Maul. And definitely it's going to be a phenomenal to see where it goes, because I got a feeling this is going to be like the way that we've gone so far with this season between the premiere and now this episode. This is booking up to be some of the best Star Wars we've seen.
Absolutely. Becca mentioned it earlier, and I was saying I was on the same page. I wasn't really thrilled when I first heard they're bringing Darth Maul back, because I thought it was kind of a hokey idea. But, you know, Lucas insisted on it, and Filoni, you know, gave Lucas what he wanted. And Filoni, to his credit, did it really well. And I'm like, okay, they made it work. They made it happen. They made it work. Where are they going to go with it? And that's what's really sold it to me, is where they've gone with it since. It's been absolutely brilliant. So thumbs up to Filoni and his crew for taking something that could have been terrible, and a lot of people considered at the concept of it really bad idea, and saying, hey, if we got to bring this character back, let's do something with him. And wow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we are actually going to continue this discussion, but real quick, we're going to take a break and let Dan and Corey tell us about the Topps Star Wars Tradings app real quick. And we'll be right back with you. Dan, Corey, here you go.
If you are a huge Star Wars fan, and let's face it, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are, And if you love collecting Star Wars, the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps is for you.
The best part, the Star Wars Card Trader app features incredible images from the original trilogy, the prequels, the Clone Wars, Rebels, and The Force Awakens. Every era you love is included on the app.
It's easy and a lot of fun, too. Beloved characters, key scenes, and unforgettable moments are in every pack. Open the app every day and get free credits to spend on card packs from the Cantina, trade with your friends, and make new ones along the way as you continue to add to your Star Wars collection. And it's all free.
The variety makes it fun, too. So chase what you love. Some of the latest packs include poster series, classic comic book series, helmet variety packs, and so much more. There are even exclusive cards you can get by completing sets, as well as special inserts and even autograph opportunities. Don't worry about missing the cards you love either, as you sign up for notifications right on the app.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps can be downloaded for free from iTunes or Google Play. Be sure to download the app and start your collection today.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader app from Topps is available now. And remember, these are the cards you're looking for.
Thank you so much, Dan and Corey. Definitely, if you haven't picked up that trading app game, pick it up. So much fun. A lot of great cards out now, especially with the new Rogue One cards they're starting to release.
I'm a big fan of the app. I play it a lot.
See, there we go. So definitely pick it up. Look us up. We will play. We will trade. Let's do it. So let's get back into our discussion, though, of this incredibly awesome episode. Some great discussions so far on Maul and his relationship with Ezra and everything. But let's look at the rest of the crew, because he did have Darth Maul did have some interactions with Hera, mostly in particular, during their capture while they were the prisoners.
Yeah, I thought he was, and again, I, you know, have to look at it as remember, it's a cartoon and it's kids watching it, so he can't be as ruthless as he probably would be, but still pretty ruthless. And, you know, that whole order at the end of, like, you know, yeah, your friends are safe, go take them out.
Oh, absolutely. And when he's of course holding them on the ghost, and of course before he gets to the rendezvous point where he's going to meet Ezra and Kanan, and he's having that conversation with the crew where he's almost being analytical about the situation, where I always thought this was just a cargo ship, and now I see it's actually your home.
And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's almost like he's getting to know the crew better, and it's giving him a new perspective on his enemy at this point.
Well, that and if you notice, he picks up on the idea of, wait a minute, you guys live here. This is your home. If this was your home, this was Kanan's home, where would Kanan keep his Jedi holocron? Like, that was his process of thought as well.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And we see him manipulate the situation to get what he wants at that point, because we all know he wants the holocron at this point. So he, of course, goes to Hera and pretty much politely requests, with a lightsaber at her face, a tour of the ship. Mm-hmm. And of course, she obliges at that point. Of course, I do love her initial response. The airlock's right over there. Why don't you shoot yourself out?
Oh, it was awesome.
It was perfect. I mean, it's what we've come to expect. That's what, from Hera. From Hera at exactly. this point. That quick wit, that not afraid, that straight up bravery in any situation. Because she didn't even think twice about telling him to go walk off, go take a long walk off a short pier.
Yeah, you know what's funny? As you bring this up, I thought about, again, we talk about the development and growth of Darth Maul. If that was the old Darth Maul from, you know, Phantom Menace time, he'd have put the lightsaber through her face. He still had several other crew members to keep alive. He's a little more civil, at least. I mean, he's brutal and ruthless, but at the same point, a little more civil. You know, that he kind of withstood that barb and didn't chop her head off.
Exactly. And then when he turns and looks at Sabine after she's like telling him not to take him on the tour, when she's telling Tara this, he looks at her and he's like, Mandalorian, I figured you would be the one to trust me since I led your people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you'll have to forgive me. I'm missing something on that one.
At the
Clone Wars.
Clone Wars.
Okay.
At the, you know, in the final season of the Clone Wars, when Darth Maul was making his return and his comeback, he actually took over a lot of the trading guilds and actually took over a lot of revolt and took over Mandalore.
That's one of those things I'm going to have to definitely go back and refresh my brain cells on. I've seen some of it I've missed. So
exactly,
right.
And
to touch on what Tommy was saying about how Maul's character has changed. Speaking of that incident with the Clone Wars and him taking over Mandalore, he also learned, I think, at that point, because like Tommy said, he could have literally took Hera out at that point. But learning what he did in the Clone Wars by taking out Obi-Wan's loved and affectioned person, the Duchess, I think Maul's smart. He knows that Hera out of the crew is the prize, especially when it comes to Kanan. She has to last the longest because she's what's going to lure Kanan in. I think he learned that with Obi-Wan. He learned Obi-Wan in, but then he took out exactly what Obi-Wan was trying to save, which was the Duchess, because there was a relationship there. I mean, just that close encounters between Hera and Maul says a lot without even saying anything. When they go down the hallway to each corridor, each room that they occupy, as soon as she opens the doors and you can see it, she doesn't want to. Mm-hmm. As soon as she does, he knows it's Kanan's room. Exactly. And she, you know, he makes a comment to her about, you know where it is. And she goes, I don't know anything about him. Oh, that she tried to play that off, but he knows that she knows more than she should know when it comes to Kanan, and refers to him in his actual Jedi name, Caleb Doom. And it's interesting because we said how strong she was at that moment when he retrieves the holocron. She has this look almost childlike. You know, it's interesting because I love the fact, even just skipping back just a little bit, he used the same tactics that Kylo Ren did.
Yep.
The hand up to the face, and he probed her mind. And he saw it. He saw everything he wanted.
Yep.
And then some. He doesn't have to announce it all, but he knows so much now from what he read in her mind. And that, too, mixed in with everything that he eventually learns, he's got an upper hand. That's something to definitely keep in the back of our minds when we're going to see Maul again.
Yep.
He knows more now
than we
probably
think he does.
More than even Thrawn does, which actually, that just struck a thought for me. Maul could be of use to Thrawn at the moment when it comes to the Ghost Crew. But anyway.
Oh my gosh. Those two working together.
That's a scary thought. I'm going to leave it at that. That's a very scary thought.
But it's one of those things, I don't think Sidious would allow it.
Well, a lot of things Sidious doesn't allow, but it still is done.
That's true.
So, it's a big galaxy. It's a big empire. You can't watch it all.
That is true.
He's not as omnipotent as he thinks he is. So
Apparently not. Or else we would have had a quick ending to this rebellion, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
All right. Perfect.
Well, I keep, again, my original thoughts when Maul came back and then he was talking about again taking on, you know, Sidious and Vader and these things, and we all ultimately know again how much of a failure that would be on his part, and would actually be rather stupid on his part to attempt it. So whether it's this vision that he's had at the end that has now sent him on another path, or if that's the actual path he was looking for to start with, is what's my direction, what's my purpose, it appears that they're turning him away. He's not going to be confronting Vader or Palpatine anytime, at least in the near future, that if that's the direction it appears to be going, which I find a more interesting path, because it's less predictable.
Correct. And one thing I've learned from this show and even from the Clone Wars over the years, when you think you got it predicted,
it changes
changes out of it. Mm-hmm. That's one thing they've always done good. They get you thinking one way, they take you a complete other way. And even when you think you figured out what other way they're going to go, they've taken you somewhere else. So it's phenomenally written, phenomenally done, and these guys definitely know what they're doing to keep us all engaged. I mean, look at this. We're sitting here talking for an hour about a 22-minute episode. So they obviously
now my question to you two guys is do you think we're all obviously assuming that he sees it's Obi-Wan Kenobi is alive on Tatooine and that's the direction he's headed. Do you think the show itself will address this storyline directly, or are they setting up something else for another project? Or I don't know that it would fit. I love the idea of seeing Maul going after Obi-Wan Kenobi in the Rebels episodes, but does that fit with what Rebels is doing? Like, because they're not going to introduce Ezra and Kanan and the Ghost Crew to Tatooine, would they? That would really kind of – I don't know. Where do you guys see it going is what I'm asking.
You know
– Well, go for it, Aaron. Well, you sure?
This is one of those topics that is going to lend itself to a variety of different opinions. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think everybody can agree that the he's alive is referring to Obi-Wan.
It's the only one that makes sense. It's the only character that
logical,
makes sense.
Exactly. It's the only logical part of it that can remotely even make sense. But whether or not it will occur in Rebels, I can go both ways on this. If they're going to do it in Rebels, it has to be soon. It has to be quick. It's not something they can drag out, in my opinion, till the end of the season, especially with a lot of this season supposedly tying in to Rogue One. So they need to, in my opinion, I think they would need to step that up and make it done quick, because we know the events of Rogue One lead directly into the events of A New Hope, and he ain't going to be mm-hmm. on Tatooine that long.
Right.
And there's no indication that any of this would have happened in the recent passing.
Right. There was a Dark Horse comic book quite a few years ago that addressed that storyline as a Legends story.
Mm-hmm. I know where you're going.
Yeah, it was never officially canon, but they did the story as a Legends story of Darth Maul showing up on Tatooine.
Mm-hmm. And it going was great. After
Kenobi. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I will take your words on that, because I have heard about Kenobi, I have not read it.
But Kenobi was much younger in the timeline. So right. this is much further up in the timeline. Obviously, we're talking about, what, a couple of years before New Hope at this point?
Right. But that situation, though, could play out, because even though, like you're saying, Obi-Wan was a lot younger in the timeline, the way it ends could still play out and still fit.
Right. You know what I'm talking about. You've read the story.
Oh, I do. Yeah. A long time ago, but I remember the ending and going, shut the front door. You know? it was just awesome. So, I mean, it could work. But see, now you have to remember, Pablo actually came out, I think it was in April, on a StarWars.com interview with Dan Brooks. And he did say they will, you know, reinstate Legends as canon if it fits, if it fits the storyline. Exactly. So again, certain aspects could come back into the fold. There's 2 years from now until Rogue One should hit, just about shy of that maybe, but in a roundabout way, about 2 years. And yes, Obi-Wan is a lot older. And yes, we know from A New Hope, Vader specifically states, your powers are weak, old man. You know, you got to remember, he's like the Tin Man. He kind of rusted a bit, you know? He hasn't had to be oiled and refined in a long time. So the problem is, if they were to have their duel of fates for the final round, I'm putting in the timeline aspects. Again, it's only about a 2-year difference, or give or take.
Right.
Maul is very still, he's still agile. He's still got these great moves, and I don't know if Obi-Wan can hold up to him. That's what scares me.
Yeah.
So if it were to play out that way, I don't know. But if it were to play out, like, again, in the Dark Horse comic, which, spoiler alert, it's not even really a spoiler because it's Legends. It doesn't matter. It's not canon, people.
Go ahead, tell it, Becca.
Yeah, because it isn't canon. Owen basically takes him out. And he does fire his blaster at him, and he gets him. And at that point, I don't remember the exact wording, but Owen basically tells the crazy old hermit to stay away.
Right. You there's know, a that's the confrontation that sets up this whole animosity between Owen and Ben Kenobi is that Maul came after them and it endangered Luke as well.
Yep. And that's why. And he took him out. It was a lucky shot and he got him. But Owen basically at that point specified to Obi-Wan, you're not allowed to come around here. And that's why in A New Hope, he basically shuts the door on that whole aspect for even Luke. You're like, you are not to seek him out. He's just a crazy old man, you know, and that's it. And that's the end of the story, you know, like basically, you know, Owen goes all father on him and just says, nope, end of story. You're not allowed to go and see him. He's just a crazy old man. And it would tie in. It would fit. I'm not saying that's what they're going to do.
It worked better when Kenobi was younger because then you have years, you have decades of animosity between the two now.
To build.
As opposed to a few short years between a Maul confrontation and, you know, the events of A New Hope. So,
right.
That obviously doesn't mean they have to stick to every detail in that comic book. That comic book was never canon anyway. Even when it was first written, it was never canon. So
it was just a great fun story.
Yeah.
Well,
but who knows?
No, exactly. Who knows? And you know, I was going to save this for a little later, but being that we're talking about the endgame for Maul right now and where he would go with this Obi-Wan Kenobi thing, we did get an email because we did put it out on Twitter to send us your thoughts and email us your thoughts or questions about the episode. And we did get an email from a good friend of the show, David Motters, who's been on the show a couple times for us, who wanted to ask a few questions. And he's looking at that long-term goal. So his questions are, so his first question is, do you think we'll see Ezra and or Kanan die in an epic saber battle with Maul? And since we're talking about this whole possible Obi-Wan twist in the game as well, could they possibly play in? I'm adding this part in. Could they possibly play in into that twist and show up and be the reason? As Beck has pointed out, Obi-Wan's not a spring chicken at this point anymore. And he's been held up. He's been in his hermit state for a while. He may not have the skill to hone up to Maul. Is this where Anakin or Kanan, one of them, step in, wind up saving Obi-Wan? And in this case, where one of them meets their fate.
That's interesting. Here's the only thing I can think is, as I'm curious as to how far Rebels is going to, like, you can connect certain things, but if you cross over too much, it becomes a stretch. Like, that's where my concern is sending, say, Kanan and Ezra and the Ghost Crew to Tatooine. Maul goes after, you know, Ben Kenobi on Tatooine, and the Ghost Crew shows up, and there's this whole conflict on Tatooine. And, like, how far are you kind of stretching the material now at this point that it make sense? Will it work? Or, you know, because to me, when we see Kenobi in A New Hope the first time, he hasn't seen a Jedi, he hasn't seen anybody in a long, long time. So to bring in some outside influence now kind of, to me, corrupts the pureness of that. But again, I could be wrong. And if the writing's done right, who knows? It could be a hell of a story.
It's true.
Yeah, absolutely.
I still want to see the Obi-Wan Kenobi, the Desert Years Tatooine movie. I have a whole thing on that I could do another hour show on.
There we go. We'll have to bring that one up to Dan and Corey.
Oh, I have a whole, at least an hour on that, what I want to see with that, but that's a whole different episode.
There we go. All right. Now, there's a second part to that, to this question, or to his email. Is the second question is, by the end of Rebels, or whether it be this season or by the end of the show altogether, do we see Ezra or Kanan putting an end to Maul, taking Maul out?
I don't foresee it would be either Kanan or Ezra, to be honest with you. Mainly because I don't think Maul would go after Ezra to harm him in any way, because I feel Maul needs Ezra for whatever he has scheming in his head there. I think Ezra is essential to him. At least he believes he is. So I don't foresee that. Kanan, on the other hand, I think he's a different Kanan than he was in season one or in season two. I don't think he's looking to battle anyone unless it's absolutely necessary. He is at this point now, as he says, and I love it, he is seeing things differently. And I love to say it, it is refined Jedi sight. I love to call it that because he's not looking to attack anyone. I mean, even with those crawlers, I call them the spidery things, but they call them crawlers.
Oh, they're spiders.
Yeah, they are spiders. And I don't like spiders at all. I mean, I know Indiana Jones hates snakes. I can't stand spiders. I just can't. Even, like I said, those things petrified him in the last season. Now he can walk right by him, put his hand out and says, go in peace. Kanan is a different man right now. I don't foresee him looking for a fight. Of course, I could be wrong, but that's how I see him. I personally don't think they're going to cross Maul's path unless it's absolutely necessary, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Maul's got his own mission.
Yeah. My thoughts on who takes Maul out, like, again, assuming that they take him out. They went through a lot of trouble to bring him back, so one would assume maybe they want to keep him around for a while. But it would make sense. There's two logical choices, and they've already steered us in one of them, that he would go and confront Vader to take on the other apprentice, the apprentice who replaced him, or going after Sidious, he would ultimately have to confront Vader. Vader would be the one he'd have to confront. Sidious wouldn't sully his hands. But it seems now they might be steering it in the other direction, which is Obi-Wan Kenobi, a rematch. So there's your two obvious choices. That's if they go obvious.
It's always if they go obvious, but it's always that back door they always try to.
You never know. Into. Yeah, that's just the two obvious choices.
Exactly. So definitely. Thanks for the email, David. That was awesome. I appreciate the questions. I mean, and Let's look at shift gears here a little bit because we've gone over the crew, we've gone over Maul, we've gone over Bendu. A lot of what made this spectacular, this episode so incredibly awesome, was everything else about the episode itself: the animation, the effects, the Kiner soundtrack again, they all just tied in and brought this story to life in a way that just it was mind blowing. For example, as we mentioned during a break, we were looking at the whole scene where Maul throws Kanan outside of the airlock, and he goes flying through and winds up coming back in through the landing dock, and he's laying there after being in space, and he's got the frost and ice all over him, and you can hear those effects, that ice crackling.
The attention to detail.
The attention to the detail that they spent and that they spend toiling for hours on end just to make every scene perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Culminated in this episode.
Yeah, it's interesting with that scene because, again, the attention to detail is what sells the tension in a scene. I'm watching what I know is a cartoon. It's not even real life actors acting out a scene. It's a cartoon. And yet I'm feeling the tension for Kanan in this situation because it's well directed. It's well, the attention to detail is there that makes you involved in the scene. And as Becca had pointed out, the ice crystals forming on his skin, we realize that he's not invulnerable. Yes, Jedi are strong, they have a lot of powers, they could survive things a normal human couldn't, but he went through a lot on that, and that's the detail is what sells that.
Oh, I agree. I mean, it was just beautifully done, and like we were saying, the ice crystals forming, and you can hear it as he lands in the landing dock. As he lands, you hear the crackling of his knuckles, the crackling of his joints, you know, not to mention you can hear his heavy breathing because he's got like almost like a like frostbite, you know. Mm-hmm. It's perfect because, like Tommy was just saying, yes, he's a Jedi. All of his senses are heightened, unlike a normal human. And yet he's still trying to catch his breath and trying to warm up so he can get back into motion and help his friends. I mean, that was a major setback, you know, even for a Jedi. But the way they did it, because, again, you're bringing a sense of realism there because, again, as I said off air, I am not a science buff. I, you know, again, it's probably another reason why I love Star Wars, because kind of the laws of physics are out the door when it comes to Star Wars, you know. But this was obviously a sense, a nice little touch of realism, because space is cold. You would freeze being out there bare skinned. We would die, but, you know, he's Kanan. So he comes back, and yes, he definitely suffered some effects from that. And it was just well done. And I'm glad that they did it, because even though it was just, not even a minute long, but just the artwork that went into that and the music that played along with it, it was perfect. You felt his emotions. It was awesome.
Absolutely. And let's not forget the final scene here at the end of this episode, which really played out through the animation, was the whole vision scene where they combined the two holocrons. A lot of color, a lot of bright, vibrant explosion of color. And then it's the one scene where you actually could see through Kanan's eyes at that point, and mm-hmm. see what he's seeing through the force light at that point. Because he exclaims and exclaims, he can see Ezra and Maul. And he actually led to saving Ezra at that point. And the whole thing just pulled together so perfectly.
They did some really interesting lighting effects with Maul's face in that shot, too.
Oh, it was awesome, wasn't it? He was creepy. It was perfect. Yeah,
very photo negative. Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting lighting effects with that.
Oh, absolutely. They did some fabulous work in the animation on this. That scene there stands out to me as one of my most favorite animated scenes that they've done mm-hmm. in the season so far. Not just the season, but in the series so far,
right?
Because it's so intense and in detail.
And just as a side note to the animation, there was a lot of flack going on when the initial image of Darth Maul in that shirt appeared online, and people were like jesting that it was a golf shirt. And I didn't see that. there was a lot of negative feedback about that shirt.
Really?
And watching the full episode, it doesn't look nearly as bad as the one still frame apparently somebody decided to concentrate on and say, this is the stupidest shirt I've ever seen. But there were people calling it like a golf shirt and, you know, making kind of fun that he shopped, you know, at Izod or something.
Sorry, that's funny.
Yeah, I saw a couple memes talking about how apparently t-shirts are canon now.
Right.
Oh, that I saw. Okay, now I get you. Yeah. See, I'm not even paying attention to what he's wearing. I'm paying attention to his face.
The outfit plays out better. And I also found it interesting that he was wearing gray. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You caught that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's awesome, isn't it? Makes you wonder. Really makes us think.
They kept it very ambiguous. He's not wearing black. He's not wearing bright colors. He's wearing gray.
Yes, mm-hmm. he is.
But going back to that light, I have to say, going on a real world spectrum, I do work for a retina specialist. That would totally fry your retinas if that was real life. Just saying. You'd all be blind after that moment.
Well, you know, those Sith yellow contacts do a lot to protect.
I'm sure.
Just saying. But anyone else think of something? I'm going to ask you guys, because that's something I thought of. And it was probably the second time I watched it, because I have watched this episode now, I think 5 or 6 times. I know. Little obsessive, but my kids couldn't watch it with me the first or second time around. So when they were around, then they wanted to watch it. And of course I watch with them. So gives me an excuse to watch it. Right.
Of course.
But, that moment with the bright lights and the merging of the holocrons, and thinking of what Bendu said about how dangerous it is to merge two powerful, I guess you want to call them two measurements of knowledge and of power, you know, one on the dark and one on the light, whatever. Merging together two strong vergences of the Force. I couldn't help but think at that moment, I know this is going to sound weird, but maybe it won't, is at the end of Jedi, when Vader finally turns to Anakin, and he, through the middle of that Sith lightning, Anakin lifts him up, Vader lifts him up, and that Sith lightning actually is a conduit and goes through them, in a sense, kind of through them both, before he throws him down. Makes me wonder, that merging of that power there, along with the merging of the holocrons, again, two very strong vergences of the Force merging together with a conduit of some sort of energy, you know, and joining. what would have happened had they both survived? Would something traumatic have happened to them? I mean, granted, Ezra finally pulled away and closed the holocrons, and that's why they flashed back, like jumped back with the way they did. It was like a burst of energy.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder, was almost what Bendu was getting at, something similar to what happened with Vader, Anakin, and Palpatine? Again, to me, I see some sort of similarity there. Am I reaching way too far with that?
What I got from Bendu's warning was that the merging of the holocrons will show you the truth, but whether or not what truth you're expecting or what truth you can handle, or your version of the truth compared to what you see or how you interpret it, I suppose, is the danger.
Right.
I think what he was hinting at is you might see what you don't want to see. You're looking for an answer. It might not give you, it'll give you an answer. You might not like the answer it gives you.
Right. But Luke did get an answer. And did he like it when they merged together? That's what I'm saying. Luke is the one that was left with the answer at the end.
Sure. But
so I'm just trying to see if anyone sees any.
But he paid a heavy price. Yeah.
Right. But will they pay a heavy price in the end for knowing what they know? Because now that they know, they can't unknow it.
Well, if you think of, again, this direction that this vision is possibly at least taking Darth Maul into going after his former adversary, Obi-Wan, which is, again, we're all assuming this is where the story is going.
we all wanted to go there.
whether it happens in Rebels or whether it happens in a book or who knows where it might actually happen. But this, it's going to take him in a direction maybe he shouldn't go. Maybe it will be his ultimate fate. Mm. That's the interesting spin, is it showed him something. Was it a good thing for him? Ultimately, we don't know until it plays out.
Yeah, that's very deep.
Sorry.
It's one of those, I'm going to have to sit back and just work on this one for a while and work that one over.
Well, when you see something, if you're Darth Maul, and you see this vision of the guy that took you down is still alive, you have two choices. You have a choice to let it go and carry on with your life, or to go after him and pursue that path. And it appears that he's going to pursue that path, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Again, where you go, the vision is going to show you a vision. What you choose to do with it is ultimately up to you.
Right. And what you take from that vision, too.
And what you take from it. Exactly. Yep.
I agree very much. Well, because Ezra doesn't know what he saw. He basically
has no clue what he saw.
It was just places, planets, some familiar and some not. He didn't say he saw people.
He saw two suns in the sky.
Right. Yep. So what does that mean to him? For right now, it means nothing.
It means nothing to him. It means everything to us, obviously.
Right, because we know. we know what that means.
At least we hope we know what it means.
Oh, I see what you did there.
We hope we know what it means.
Awesome.
So.
Well, we could say we knew or we hope.
Exactly. Either way, it's a new hope for us.
Yeah. Exactly.
Anyway, awesome, awesome. So,
wait, can we milk that cow any longer?
I don't think we can. Maybe we could definitely try, but the Empire might strike back.
Yeah, get some. How much
it's
blue?
Not milk? How the Force works, guys.
How much blue milk can we get from that Bantha?
Oh, however long it takes for the Force to awaken.
Oh.
Okay, this is. I'm all right. Yes, there we go.
We've gone to that level.
Gone there, and
we've reached bad pun level number 5.
Oh, too funny, guys! That was awesome.
What a run! Well, definitely, this has been definitely a tremendous, tremendous conversation and a tremendous analysis of this episode. Definitely my favorite so far of this season, and it's going to be hard to top this episode for me.
I agree.
But
if it goes where we think it might go,
if it goes where we think it going, yes, it's going to be, easily topped if they do it right, which I have all the faith in Dave Filoni and Kevin Gilroy and the whole crew there. If they're going to do it, they are going to do it right. I have no doubt about that.
They've done some genius stuff, so I have total faith in them too.
Absolutely. So definitely we want to, it's been a great talk, great analysis. But let's get some final thoughts here. We're going to start with Becca. Give us your final thoughts on this episode, Holocrons of Fate.
Just probably outstanding. Probably one of the most remarkable aspects of the Force ever, you know, brought to us on a screen, not just a movie screen, but on screen. I actually hope they can keep this up. I love where they're going with the Force, because that's my lure to this, is the Force itself. So yeah, I mean, my expectations were blown completely out of the water. Hats off to everybody. They're just, everyone in the story group, they're pulling out no stops. You know what I mean? They're just going with it. And I honestly, this for me beat the premiere. They just keeps getting better. So yeah, I can't wait for the next episode. Just awesome.
Perfect. Perfect. Tommy, give us your final thoughts on Holocrons of Fate.
All right. Well, you brought me in as a Maul fan. And as I've mentioned, I've, you know, been a fan since his first appearance. But my respect and love for the character has grown absolutely, you know, a hundredfold with what they've done with him, you know, bringing him back in the Clone Wars. But even more especially now with what they've done with him in Rebels. So I am absolutely on the edge of my seat, waiting to see what they do with this character. And there's so much potential. There's so much excitement for this story. Could go a million different directions right now. And that's what has me coming back for more, and will have me, you know, hooked until the resolution, because I don't know what this character is going to do. I don't know what his motives are. And I'm just excited to find out.
Perfect. Same here. You're exactly right. I brought you in as a huge Maul fan, because I wanted that point of view, and definitely I appreciate it. Every time I think this series can't get better, they outdo themselves. When all through the first season, when they initially brought in Vader, then of course was the big build up to when we see Ahsoka wield her lightsabers for the first time, through the final episode where we have that epic clash between Ahsoka and Vader. You just didn't think it could get any better than that. And then this happens.
And then this. And then he lives.
Twin sons, and he lives. Four words that is going to echo, I got a feeling, throughout this season. This has definitely been absolutely incredible episode. Definitely goes in my all-time top five episodes of Rebels that since the beginning. So definitely, I can't wait to see where they take this from here. It's going to be a phenomenal. And as I said earlier, I think this is going to be the best season of Rebels or of any animated Star Wars that we've seen in a while, ever, with the storylines that they have the potential to work with here. So definitely a great episode. One of my favorites. Overall, I can't help it, from the animation to the story to the performance by the actors to the soundtrack, which, by the way, Kevin Kiner, I love you, bro. You aced it again.
Much love to the soundtrack. I know we've been talking all night, but the music on the show is brilliant. Brilliant.
I tell you, Kevin Kiner, they truly got one of the greatest composers outside of John Williams working on this show.
It's brilliant, and I don't use that word loosely. So
it definitely is. So kudos there. Overall, I have to just, this is going right up to the top. This is an A+ show, A+ episode right here, and just everything involved in it just clicked perfectly. Everything was spot on where it needed to be. It was as close to perfection as you can possibly get on any level. So definitely one of my favorites. Tommy, if you had to grade it, how would you grade the episode?
A++.
A++.
A double-sided lightsaber A+.
That's great.
I love it.
Aw,
perfect.
That's great.
Perfect. Becca, how about you?
I'm going to give it 10 stars. Yeah, I know I'm not as creative, but I'm going to say 10 stars. I'm happy. Like I said, I'm still watching it. You know, yeah. I just, you know, I enjoyed it. I really did. And I can't believe how much they packed in there in 22, 23 minutes. And if anyone in the story group is listening, extend it, please. You know, mm-hmm. please. We want more.
Oh, yes.
Never have enough.
Give us the uncut scenes.
Yes, please. All the blooper reels. That'd be great, too.
Give us a full Looney director cut. That would, oh my gosh, I don't know what I would do if that would happen. But phenomenal episode all around. Definitely, if you've missed it, I don't know why you're listening to this show when you should have watched it already.
Spoilers.
But it phenomenal all around. Go back, watch it again and again and again. You can't go wrong with this. It's definitely one of the best episodes out there that they've done. Becca, Tommy, thank you so much for joining me for this discussion. I honestly, this could not have gone with two better people. You guys are awesome. I appreciate you joining me.
I appreciate you having me.
No,
thank you, Aaron. That was wonderful.
My pleasure.
I got my Rebel fix tonight. It was great.
Awesome. So let's go through here real quick. We'll start with you, Becca. If somebody wants to continue the conversation or go over some of the things you've shared or just talk about Star Wars in general, how would somebody go about getting in touch with you?
Best place to find me is on Twitter at @YouAreAngelB. I'm on Twitter more than anything else, so find me there. If you want to hit me up, also on Twitter at Tarkin's Top Shelf. I'm always there, ready to go, talking about the new canon books at the Cantina Cast or the CantinaCast.com, CoffeeWithKenobi.com once a month. Yes, I blog there too. Yeah, I'm kind of everywhere lately.
You are all over the place, aren't you, Becca?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the Star Wars Hour, which is promoted by Channel Star Wars. I'm there now, too. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't sleep. That's the only answer I got.
There you go. And, of course, Tommy, if somebody wants to continue the conversation with you, discuss Maul and all things Maul related or even Star Wars, how would they go about getting in touch with you?
Oh, I don't blog as much as I used to, and I always feel guilty whenever it comes up because I used to do all that stuff, and then real life has gotten kind of in its way of that. But, look me up. I do post over at Coffee at Kenobi. I chat with the guys over there. I'm on Facebook. Look up DJ Tommy Mac, and you can find me over there. I'm around. I'll be on the links for this cast and all that kind of stuff, too. I'll make some comments, and then people can reach out to me from there. So,
perfect. Perfect. And of course, all their information and addresses and links will be in the show notes. And of course, we want to know what you think as well here at Rebels Reactions. Let us know what you think. Email us at rebelsreaction@coffeewithkenobi.com or hit us up on Twitter at Rebels Reactions. Definitely, we want to hear from you, know what your thoughts. If you thought we missed something completely, or if you thought of you see things from a different angle, let us know. Definitely. We can include the email in a future show as well. Cause definitely the discussion never ends here at Coffee with Kenobi, at all. So definitely we, appreciate you, everybody listening. We appreciate you, Becca, Tommy, for joining me tonight. Again, thank you so much. This was great.
I had a blast.
Absolutely. I did too. And definitely, I hope to have y'all back again in the future. If you're wanting to come back, we'll
anytime.
Love to have you.
Absolutely. Anytime.
It's a fantastic time here. I love it.
Yes, we enjoy our fantastic times, don't we?
Yes, we do.
So definitely thank you, everybody, for listening to Rebels Reactions. Check out the rest of the Coffee with Kenobi podcast network, Lattes with Leia, Comics with Kenobi, Legends Library, and, of course, our flagship show, who could forget it, Coffee with Kenobi. So check them out. Check out all the great bloggers on the site at coffeewithkenobi.com. There's always something going on at our site or, of course, on our Facebook or Twitter as well. So check it all out. And remember, this is the podcast you're looking for.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here.
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello,
send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com, or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed @coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.
If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps is for you. Download the free app from iTunes or Google Play and collect your favorite images from the classic 1977 Star Wars cards to Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, The Force Awakens, and much more. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for.